So after the school, then what happened in the village?
Some of this was simultaneously going on, okay? So the school's under construction. They have to wear uniforms. And so we were trying to think, well, what else can we do to help this village develop? And so we asked the chief, are there a couple of women that know how to sew? And so we actually got a donation from World Vision for some sewing machines. And so we let them come to us. And there were two women that said, yeah, you know, they wanted to sew. And we had some Rotary support that got us the initial supply of uniform material. After that, you know, then you can sew other things, wedding dresses or whatever. And then we thought, well, we need someone to probably maybe manage like a school supply store. So this guy said in his house he'd, you know, be willing to store the stuff. And from that well that was next to the school, a woman had started a garden and built a little wooden makeshift house. So she became a lunch lady.
Natural.
And with another Rotary grant, we managed to get some dishes and big pots and things like that. And because it's a government school and there's a garden and access to water, then World Food Program can augment and support the lunch or breakfast, whatever, that occurs there at the school.
Where does the material come for the new uniforms?
Material comes from the market. They've got big bolts of it.
So people order ahead, if you will. They put down the money and then the sewers can go get the material to make the uniforms.
Well, our hope was that they would have the money reserved, knowing that they were going to, I don't think the people pay for them until the, you know, uniform is made. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're getting ahead of the game.
And now she's making all kinds of clothes and she's expanded into being kind of a makeup. And she'll sell, she has a little stall that she'll sell snacks mm-hmm. to the kids.
I bet she cuts hair too.
I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, they really are such entrepreneurs. So. And they dye their hair all the time black, so they don't go gray.
Oh, they do. All right.
But the main thing was the water. So over the course of years, that village was really the main village that we focused on. And so we worked in that village until everybody who wanted one had a well, and then also water filters. So when we were in this whole process of, you know, the school and the uniforms and finding sewers, because they had to pay 50% of the value of that machine, we proposed a village fund idea. And most villages have like a savings group, this sort of thing. And we let the chief decide what was within his villagers' capacity to pay. Well, we don't want to just give this stuff away and start this entitlement attitude. And so to get a water filter, they have to pay $3.65. And to get a well, they have to pay $5. But the money doesn't come back to Trailblazer. It goes into a village fund. So it's villagers' money managed by them for them. And then as the capital grows from the different products or services that they pay for from us, then they start their little microloan system.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, right.
And so villagers can borrow, you know, $10 to go to the doctor or $100 to maybe buy a pig or, you know, whatever they mm-hmm. want. And sometimes they start a small business or they put a better roof on their house or
community bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are the filters made out of? Is there some natural material that's easily accessible and fairly inexpensive for Cambodia?
It's made out of concrete.
Oh, okay. The filter itself?
Yeah.
It's made out of concrete.
Yeah. And we basically received, it's a big metal mold, so they're poured upside down, so to speak. And there's a copper pipe. So it's sand filtration, which is nothing new. But what's added to this technology is there's like 2 inches of standing water on top of the sand. In that grows a good bacteria. So that's the bio layer. And that's the good bacteria eats the bad bacteria. And then, of course, then the sand filters out parasites, viruses, that sort of thing.
Heavy metals and so forth.
Yeah, it takes out iron. You can put a different kind of almost like a little basket that sits down in there with rusted nails if there's arsenic issues, and that the arsenic sticks to the nails.
Wow, what a simple solution. That's amazing. Do they periodically test the water to see if anything's changing?
We did a random testing of about 35% of the filters that we had in the field. And it's cleaning in the water. It was 96.5% to 98% pure.
Well, that's fabulous. So the most expensive part of that sounds like the copper.
Yes. It's, in a way, night and day from where it was and where it is now. I mean, now the homes are nice wooden homes. Some of them even have kind of enclosed concrete bases. There's some latrines in there, and people have motorbikes, cell phones. They're eating three meals a day.
The health must have improved for everybody.
Yeah, I would say so. And just because now they're healthier, they can work, the kids can go to school. So just that natural progression of development happens. Just all these little roadside things that they're doing, or if one person is growing watermelon, well, then they have a cart and they go around and sell it to the other villagers, and they just, other development is happening. Yeah. You know, actually that village now is pretty well established. I mean, we still sometimes go out there, but we've been in well over 50 villages at this point. So
it's reproducible, if you will, the same process.
To some extent. I don't know that we'll have exactly the same as in Sra Village, because they really were just so remote and so poor. And other villages that we're going in now have some other involvement, you know, because, and in a way, even with Sra, we kind of punched a hole out there. And once it started to get noticed, other organizations were also starting to go there with midwife training and, you know, first aid and post and prenatal care and that sort of thing. So there's other organizations that began to find that village. And I know when we went down to Phnom Penh to the ministry, they asked, how did you find this village? And it was from the district office, you know. But so now, you know, other villages maybe aren't at that bad of a situation in that condition. So, you know, now we're just dealing with more clean water and agriculture trainings. We actually have two schools under construction this year. So they'll be our ninth buildings that we've done it.
Well, that's very exciting. It's like good news spreading.
Yeah.
How is this process very uniquely Cambodian or uniquely Buddhist? How would this not look the same somewhere else?
Yes, and they, even at the village level, have a very democratic process. And as the school was built, and some of this other development we were helping with in the trainings and this sort of thing, they actually held an election of education committee, construction committee, municipal project committee, or whatever. And I would say that at least half, probably 50%, were women that were voted in. And often it's, you know, female principals or head teachers in the schools, chiefs, female chiefs of the village. So it's a pretty even system that way, and I think works really well. I think for the most part, they really do come together as a community, and the families are typically clustered. And
did you notice a change in attitudes towards foreigners or towards folks from the U.S. in particular? I mean, they had their war with Vietnam, what they would call their Vietnam War, I guess you'd call it, that didn't end until 91. What is it, 75 to 91? So, and it was the Vietnamese that got rid of the Khmer Rouge and the repressive government that was causing the genocides, really with the help of the Soviets. So what were the attitudes towards folks from the States?
Well, I mean, they had a history, too, of where the French, you know, occupied back in the, I think, late 50s and 60s. If you do run into some older folks, they'll speak French. They don't speak English.
Oh, yes, of course they would. Yeah, because they were a protectorate of France for 1863, right? It became a French protectorate, and they didn't have independence until 53. So the attitudes towards, quote, foreigners started with their relationship with the French.
And actually, I mean, it's true, as you say, that the Vietnamese are the ones that finally ran out the Khmer Rouge. However, it ended up that they weren't a whole lot better to be governed by. And so I think the end of the fighting was maybe even 97. And so, I mean, they have a term for foreigner, which, Barang, which actually had been for French, but now they have to, you know, broaden that to just be foreigner.
And so you're a Barang.
A Barang, yes.
Okay. Male or female, we're all a Barang.
Well, I think they see foreigners as, for the most part, coming in and helping with the development. And in a way, they really like Americans because we tip other... So we're walking ATMs. There's really not that many Americans. There's more, you know, British and Australians and New Zealanders and Koreans and Chinese, and they've got their attitudes about them. Yeah, a lot of times they, you know, don't necessarily always share their opinions, but they do say they like the Americans. And I think the Australians are pretty game, so they're a lot of fun. You know, they do a lot of interesting things.
So I know Cambodia is still considered one of the poorest countries in the world. How are they rich? How are they rich in a way that we're not? Or is there something that you were surprised by pleasantly and kind of, you know, learned from them?
Well, I think, again, it boils down to family. And even though they may be poor and they don't have a lot of physical things, stuff, they are happy people, and they would give the shirt off their back if you needed it. So I think their culture is very rich. You know, they still are, like with the arts, their dance and, you know, the Apsara dancing and their textiles and...
The silk must be gorgeous.
You know, and their carvings and the silver work that they do, and so those kinds of traditional things are a big thing. And of course the tourists, you know, they put on lots of shows. They have the Apsara dancing shows, and then the other skits that are just traditional fishing dance or the, you know, whatever. They have all these different kinds of dances, and
that must follow the stories that they tell,
and like the shadow puppets and things like that.
Oh, they do the Wayang shadow puppet, as the Indonesians do? Oh, that's cute. Kind of to act out their stories.
Right, yeah.
So do they have a sense of history and look to the elders for stories so that they remember maybe the original Khmer Empire and how great it was? I mean, at one time, I guess that was the center of all of Southeast Asian culture and lasted for 600 years, so a lot to be proud of.
They really don't have world history. They don't know a lot about other places, but they do learn about their own country. And I know one time a young gal that was staying with us for a while, the moon was really big and bright and full one night, and we got the binoculars out, and she was looking at it. And I said, yeah, men have flown to the moon in like a plane rocket. And she goes, what? I mean, it blew her mind.
Yeah, I bet. Possibly their ideas about what life in the States is like might be a little bit off.
Well, I think they judge life in America like Knott's Landing or Dallas or, you know, some of these...
Crazy rich.
Yeah. Everybody lives in a mansion and is rich and, yeah.
Well, how did this experience change you as a person?
It is. It's very rewarding, and I couldn't imagine doing anything different. I mean, Trailblazer's still going strong. We're still getting water filters out there and wells drilled and teaching people better techniques for gardens. And over the years, we've helped tens of thousands of Cambodians try to move from just mere sustenance to more sustainable livelihoods. I feel humble and honored to have been, and hopefully will continue to be, part of making that kind of a positive impact in people's lives. Because we have seen lots of improvements. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint them all, but, you know, we know that kids are going to school and being able to stay in school. And, I mean, you always have some of those bright, shining stars, you know, that we've tracked. But just to know that they've got clean water and they're healthier. And, I mean, we take, you know, random case studies and and ask people how their lives are now and how it's different. And
so you sense a greater sense of hope in general.
Yes, for sure.
Does a foundation, what are you going to do next?
There's plenty of work still.
There's plenty to do in this one province in the northwest corner.
We go through lots of gravel and concrete and sand and bricks. And 80% of the population is still subsistence farmers, still the level of poverty that exists. To look beyond just the temples, the rural people are hardworking people, proud people. There's still a lot of work to be done, and